Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right, as you listen to this podcast, we will have just finished our reading with Rogues for the month.
Right? It was great.
It was great. It was so good.
I can't believe that bat got in, though.
Yeah, maybe that was weird. anyway, we're recording right now, but by the time you hear this, we will be done with our reading with Rogues. There will be reading with Rogues in December, unless it's just too crazy busy, but that's the plan.
Yep.
And we haven't picked books yet. We'll let you guys know. But until the end of October, you can still get 15% off on Harrow County Volume 1, which I think we all recommend.
Yeah, I just actually read it for the first time last night and really liked it, so I'm planning to pick up the whole series.
Yep.
By the way, I don't know where we'll end up with, but have they put out the collection yet for Claws, the Grant Morrison thing?
Not yet, but it's coming out soon.
There's a hardcover coming out
soon. Will it hit in time for...
No, I don't think it will. It might, we don't know.
It might hit before Christmas.
Second Tuesday in December.
We'll see.
Okay, anyway, just throwing out ideas, just testing the waters.
All right, and then this Saturday, we're having our Gaming with Rogues for October. That is going to be Halloween-themed, so in addition to Dead of Winter, which we'll be running for folks who hopefully have played before, it's a little hard to explain in one night and play in one night, but we're going to try to run it and have people be able to watch at least, and if you have not played before. And then we'll also be running Pandemic Reign of Cthulhu, probably some Cthulhu Flux, all the Halloween-themed games. And if you have a Rogue card, you can get 10% off on Dead of Winter this month, which I recommend because it's one of the best co-op zombie games.
Oh, yeah.
And then Saturday, October 29th is Halloween Comic Fest. We will have some free comics to give out, a decent variety of stuff, plus stuff from the last couple of years. So come out, get yourself some spooky comics. Okay, news. There was a lot of news. New York Comic Con was this weekend. Bunch of trailers went up. And just seems like there was some other stuff just kind of came out. Like, everything came out this week. So we're going to just run down a ton of news right now. And I'm going to start with all the trailers.
Okay.
Cool.
So let's start with the trailer for Get Out, horror movie written and directed by Jordan Peele of Key & Peele.
This doesn't seem to be a trailer that nobody was expecting or knew about.
No. Well, it's kind of like, remember Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Yeah.
It came out and it's like, hey, this is coming out. Same thing.
Right. By the way, if it's as good as Cloverfield Lane, I'm going to be super happy.
I know, right?
Well, I've heard a lot of criticism that the trailer gives away everything, and I'm like,
no, it doesn't.
I don't think it does. I think there's going to be some weird twists and turns that we're not expecting.
But I did feel like I was seeing more than I normally see in a trailer, so I was like, whoa, as I'm done watching this, I'm going to go into lockdown and not watch it anymore.
The big thing for me is this is from Jordan Peele, right?
Yeah.
Who's Key & Peele, so I expect he's really good. And to
quick describe what it looks like, it almost seems like there's a sort of a racially themed Stepford Wives or something like that.
It's basically there. This guy's in with a
he's in an interracial girl relationship with his
girlfriend.
Girlfriend, and they go back home to her parents
in Connecticut, I believe.
I believe that is correct.
It's one of those white places.
Yeah. He's a little bit nervous, but they're a nice couple, and everything seems like it's just like, oh, it's just going to maybe be an awkward weekend.
But then, like, they're into, like, hypnotherapy, and it seems like they may be fixing their black people to make them, like, nice and docile.
Yeah, when you see them around, there's weird stuff going on. And the trailer as it goes is more than, it starts to turn creepy.
And they start to do flashes, too. That's why I think they reveal too much is a weird complaint, because it's flashing through time, it's like, doing different stuff, and I think there's a lot more to it. Also, Bradley Whitford is playing one of the bad guys.
And
Catherine Keener. And I love both of them.
And I still don't know what the deal with the bingo cards are.
Bradley Whitford was the guy in Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods. Right? Yes, he was great.
Yes. That guy's turned out to be a bad guy in a lot of things.
Yeah. But anyway.
You could argue he was a good guy in Cabin in the Woods. But
I was going to say, he wasn't like a bad guy per se.
I mean, he did bring out the end of the
killing
world.
People had become a blasé thing for him.
They were trying to stop
the end of the world
by murdering
It's just that
people.
They had become terrible people in doing it.
Yes.
Yep. Spoiler warning. I did rewatch that just the other week with my sister. Still a very awesome
movie. Very fun. I think it just went off Netflix, actually. I may have to pick it up on Blu-ray. But anyway, Get Out looks really fun. I'm excited to see it. I don't tend to see horror movies in theaters. This one's coming out soon, right?
Is it? I didn't quite know.
November, isn't it? Or
I think it's October. I feel like it's coming out this month. I mean, it's a Halloween thing. So I'll look it
up. Sometimes those end up hitting in November. Like, there's some late era. Sometimes things hit a little bit later than Halloween.
I didn't know it was going to be that soon. If it, it is, that's awesome.
It is this Halloween, I'm almost sure.
What I noticed, and I believe it's directed by Jordan.
It's written and directed by, yes.
It had a very polished look to it. Like, it did not feel like a comedian. And sometimes I've seen this when a comedian
this is completely different from Keanu.
Yes.
The movie that
a little bit different than Keanu.
But every once in a while, a comedian or something will make a sort of more serious movie, and you still see the comedic fingerprints on it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm totally wrong. It is coming out in February.
Yeah. That's nice job, Randy.
That's too bad. I was excited to see it.
It looked good.
I won't be excited to see it in February. It's going to be months from now.
In February, it's going to be crap.
Yeah. Speaking of crap, the Power Rangers trailer came out.
I liked it.
I hated it.
What a shock.
I was somewhere in the middle. I didn't mind it, but I don't really care about this property so much.
I don't give a crap about Power Rangers. I've never found it interesting. And so I don't have, like, I don't really care if they get it wrong. It's not like Fantastic Four where I was like, oh, you guys are ruining a better movie that could come out. I felt bad for Power Rangers fans because I'm like, this is not what any of the Power Rangers fans want.
Well, I feel like the director saw Chronicle and decided to basically rehash that as a Power Rangers movie.
Do you know what came out after Chronicle from that director? Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
That's what I get. That's the vibe I got from this.
So I have a question. What was the premise of Chronicle?
Find an alien object or something that gives them powers.
Okay.
And not unlike these kids find an alien object that gives them suits and powers.
Sure, but I mean, that's a pretty generic premise.
It is. But here's to say, I still think it looks decent.
I saw people, I think so. To me, like, I've never watched an episode of Power Rangers in my life and also have no connection to the property. It didn't look like it. But what it looked to me was like people also saw sort of likening it to Spider-Man, where you saw the first Spider-Man movie, maybe Tobey Maguire's one,
yeah,
where you see it's sort of about the discovery, or at least most of the trailer was about them sort of discovering their powers. I kind of liked the Breakfast Club-ish thing, where these kids were sort of the like delinquents and people who, for whatever reason, were stuck staying late after school.
Right.
See, I like that notion, but they spend too much time on it before they get to the power stuff.
It is a little weird, but is this like the first trailer, right? They're probably, I imagine they're holding back the
action. Saying, if you did a first Avengers trailer and you don't show the superheroes using their powers, everyone would be like, what are you doing? If you do a Power Rangers trailer where there's no Megazord, there's no hint of it anywhere, you're not doing Power Rangers.
I don't know if
you know, that's a very big assumption.
I don't know. It looks to me, everything about this, the way it was cut together, and again, maybe it's the trailer, not the movie, but it reminds me very much of what they were doing in Fantastic Four, where they are basically running away from the property and doing something different. And maybe that's fine. I also got a very strong sort of YA Hunger Games Divergent feel from it.
Probably deliberate.
And I do think it's deliberate. The thing is, I don't think that's where they need to be aiming. I think that's a real mistake. I don't know. Well, again, I don't really care. But
I mean, it seems like Power Rangers was essentially kind of a YA kind of property.
I mean, the original series,
younger,
was goofy. I mean, it was.
Yes,
there's no.
It would be like hyper camp if translated into a up into a movie.
Exactly. So they have to sort of ground it in a little bit of reality. And
there's a question of whether they went too far.
Right. But I mean,
I'm putting my money on yes.
Like Dave said, this is the first trailer.
Sure, it's the first trailer, but the first trailer is supposed to get people excited for it or be like, oh, this looks really great. And the Power Rangers fans I've seen talking online are not excited.
Actually, it seems I've seen any number of people who were like, that was interesting or that piqued my interest.
Really?
Yeah,
I did too.
Dan Grendel, John Sitton, various.
Really? Okay, well, John is a guy who liked Power Rangers, I believe. That's interesting.
Yeah. Wanted a quick remark on the very end. They do hold out like this could almost not be a Power Rangers movie. I think they're trying to like, what if we can talk the people who grew up on Power Rangers into bringing their husbands, wives, etc. to go see it with them and not be embarrassed. And I think that's why they're kind of they're easing into it with this one. This is the kind of, hey, what if we got other people on board? And admittedly, like, this is one of those things where if somebody was like, hey, do you want to go see it? I would consider seeing it based on this. I wouldn't if it just looked like the show. but I just wanted to mark, at the very end, they play the Go-Go Power Rangers little notes on like a sort of like bass line kind of thing. And it struck me as like, you know, the opening bass line to Come As You Are from Nirvana? Yeah. It's very much a under-the-radar kind of, that's the approach of it.
I don't know. This to me looks like everything that I don't like about people adopting these properties, which is don't run away from it. Have you learned nothing?
You know, I still thought it looked like a fun enough. It did have a YA feel to it, but I think it had a fun enough thing and is perhaps the direction it would have to evolve into as a movie.
Well, it has to be better than the Transformers movies, which sort of,
which earned billions.
It could be equally as good, or it could be just as good as the Fantastic Four movie, which did not earn billions.
No.
And I just think at this point in time, we've gotten to a point where these things have an audience, and Hollywood has learned by now that when you embrace that audience, it tends to work out. When you run away from that audience, it tends not to.
We shall see.
We shall see. All right. John Wick 2 trailer came out.
Yeah.
Did you see John Wick?
I watched about half an hour of it and then forwarded through it.
Okay. I saw John Wick, and we're on the spectrum again here because It sounds like you go in the hated it realm. I
actually have not talked to anybody except for myself, who I talked to, who hated it. Everybody else I know thinks it was the greatest movie of all time.
Not everybody else you know, because I liked it. But I don't remember much of it, and I didn't love it.
Shot a lot of people.
Yeah. I certainly don't think it's the greatest movie of all time, but I do find it...
You really liked it.
I think it's a very entertaining popcorn flick.
And it's definitely got a lot of people waiting for the sequel. I'm not quite sure where you go with the sequel, unless you go back to him being a killer again, but it's
which
interesting...
is what they are.
This I'm trying to think, in the trailer, is it in Europe?
He goes to Rome, he's got a new dog, who hopefully doesn't get killed.
Well, it's the dog from the very end of the first one.
I forgot about that.
that's an important thing.
Okay.
I would imagine they will not. I would hope they would not be so precise as to follow that plot point.
Yeah.
I'm sure they will threaten him, though.
But a lot of people, I mean, it's got some nods back to the original. It's got lots of action-y looking things. This is like, it's another one of these potential franchises, I think, and I think it's going to do real well.
It is a franchise because John Wick 3 has already been greenlit.
I'm going to go on a quick limb and say... John Wick's dog will get shot in it, seemingly killed. He goes on a kill crazy rampage, like in the last 20 minutes or whatever, and then in the end, you just see they manage to save.
See,
him
I don't think this is going to be about his dog at all. That's too.
That won't be the premise of it. It's just going to happen somewhere in the midst of all.
From
the
what
chaos.
I understand, it's somebody after John for doing something from his past.
But his dog's going to get shot, is what I'm saying.
No, I will say the first few minutes of the first John Wick are heartbreaking. I mean, that's. My wife really reacted pretty poorly to the dog getting killed thing.
Yeah. You did tell her that nobody actually killed the dog, right?
Correct.
For some
but
reason,
it was still pretty...
That crucial difference means that I usually am not bothered by it in movies.
Yeah.
Especially like kind of like a stylized action movie setting.
So you cry it Inside Out, but you don't cry watching a dog get
that's
killed.
Probably true. I haven't seen Inside Out, but yes.
Toy Story 3?
Haven't seen.
Okay.
all right. How about Channel Zero coming out on Sci-Fi today?
Yep.
Did they just drop this trailer? Did we know about this?
Yeah. I knew. I had heard it percolating in sort of the horror circles. For
I didn't realize it was today.
The last few months, a lot of people have been calling it Candle Cove, just kind of, which is like the creepy pasta that it's based on.
Okay.
I gather each season they're going to take. Sort of a creepypasta story, expand on it, maybe weave in some other ones throughout it. I don't know quite... I wasn't quite clear on how it was supposed to work. But I just know... And I have not read the story that this is based on, although I probably will in advance of
it. So this is... Are you saying this is sort of like an American Horror Story? They're going to take one story a season? And
I believe
kind of,
so, yeah.
I like that.
I think it's shorter seasons, something like...
It probably is.
Like six episodes?
Yeah, I think
something.
So, too. Like the British model, the Black Mirror model.
Yeah.
But that's a... It's creepy. It's a creepy trailer.
Yeah, it is.
I know it has something to do with, like, what is it, like, some kind of... There's a TV show that people watch called Candle Cove.
Channel Zero.
Or Channel Zero is the name of the show, I guess. And I don't know, weird stuff happens. I couldn't tell you plot stuff from it. I can only say that the trailer looked creepy.
Well, it seems like,
that's what they're going for. I mean, it's kind of like these weird kind of one-off things and...
But I think that, I mean, they're going to have to weave a strong story into it.
It seems like the premise is that there's the people, like, kids watch this show and then become sort of maybe murderous or weird or something like that.
Definitely it causes some sort of strange reaction.
Well, Sci-Fi's track record is not phenomenal, but, I'll give it a shot.
What do they have going on lately? The Expanse and the Magicians and all that?
Those are the two big ones.
And then
ones.
Winona Earp, which some people really like.
And then Van Helsing.
Van Helsing. Which you
Van
like.
Helsing.
I thought it was the first
I forget. What's Van
episode
Helsing?
Episode was basically post-apocalyptic vampires have taken over the world.
And okay. Daughter of Van Helsing, or descendant of Grand Helsing, is a daughter, fights.
So it is literally supposed to be that kind of that
yeah.
character.
Yeah, there's some twists and turns in the zig. I thought it was entertaining, but I haven't stuck with it.
Okay.
Is it campy?
Sci-fi campy. So
yes, it's on sci-fi. Okay. Let me translate Nick for you. Yes, it's campy.
Yeah. Well, you know, like The Expanse isn't, and I don't think The Magicians is.
I mean, Battlestar Galactica wasn't campy either. Yeah. So, I mean,
it had a certain larger than lifeness.
No, but Winona Earp and there's two sci-fi.
Right, that's like their Xena style.
There's the sci-fi that wants to make another Battlestar Galactica and has not succeeded yet. But that's what The Expanse and the other
and
one.
There's the Sharknado.
Eureka, all the other sci-fi stuff that's sort of light. And Winona Earp and Van Helsing are in that same ballpark.
Yeah.
Okay. We saw a new trailer for Legends of Tomorrow, the Out of Time trailer. And remind me, how much did you watch of Legends of Tomorrow?
Let's say half the first season.
Really? That's more than I thought. Yeah. I think I watched like an episode.
I saw a little bit of it.
And Nick, did you get all the way through?
Yeah, I watched them all.
Okay. I also watched all of them, and by the end I was like, I hate this show.
I fell from enjoying to I was okay. Yeah, so I didn't ever fall to the hate.
It's the same thing that happens with Arrow, and to some extent it's happened with Flash, is all the potential, all the things you guys get right, and the stuff you get wrong really irritates me.
See, I still felt it was better than Arrow. I like their team dynamic a little bit more.
It just was so cheesy. People complain about DC stuff being cheesy on TV, and this was like, yeah, you're right, it's cheesy. It didn't make sense. Their time travel was really inconsistent. It was less consistent than Doctor Who's time travel.
It's almost more like the vibe I got from when I was watching it was that it was a little bit more like the DC party show.
Yeah.
They would kind of throw these characters together just because they got fun sparks off of them. But that, yes, it was not a strongly written show.
Well, it's painfully clear that they want to do Doctor Who with superheroes. Like, that's the pitch and that's what they're doing. And I'm not sure that's the best pitch.
That said,
this trailer still looks like Doctor Who with superheroes. Like, they're doing all the time travel. They're going to the known, like, Samurai Japan and the Old West and all this kind of stuff. But it looks super fun.
It does.
Right. It's got the DC fingerprints all over it. So there's, Justice Society.
Mm-hmm. Jonah Hex recurs.
Yep. The trailer looked great.
I swear I saw the Time Trapper. There's a dude in a cloak, and I swear I saw the Time Trapper.
That's probably true.
There's also the hints. They show Supergirl, so it's a hint at the crossover and the Dominators and mm-hmm. Flash from the future leaving a message for them. Mm-hmm. So
if they can interweave all those and actually use the DC Universe where they kind of hinted on their Twitter and blogs all the connections to the DC Universe and
the thing is,
never really did it.
They don't just need to use the DC Universe because they had plenty of nods. They need strong characters and strong stories, and that's where I think they're going to fall
down. You're saying the writing just needs, like...
The writing's not good
Well,
enough.
They're getting rid of the Hawk people, so that's good.
Yeah, and they're bringing in Vixen, but the thing is, like, I just don't know that I trust them to do stories that are interesting on a week-to-week basis. I don't think that... I don't know about 22 episodes again. I don't know about all these characters, the way they interact. I feel like there's a good show locked in there somewhere, but I feel like there's too many restrictions on it to get there. But there might be some fun episodes in the meantime.
And I will take fun over dark brooding and kind of bland.
I guess I'll take dark brooding if the story's better. I need fun and story, and so far DC has not been delivering lately on that. I need Flash to get back to where it was in season one. I need Supergirl to stay where it was in season one. I need Arrow to get back to where it was, I guess, in season two. But even then, it's...
Season two was dark.
Yeah, but it was better.
It was.
So, I don't know. I'm really frustrated with the whole Berlantiverse because there's stuff I like in every episode I watch, but there's stuff that drives me crazy in every episode, too. But this is a really good trailer, and I want to believe. Speaking of wanting to believe, there's the trailer from Valiant's, a new digital initiative, Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe.
This is put together by the Bat and the Sun
people who do those verses. They did Punisher versus Red Hood. Superhero Beatdown. Thor versus Superman.
Yep.
They always have really good special effects, really good fight choreography. The dialogue and the story is a little cheesy. But
they've had some good... They have some good moments, and it's generally good kind of crowd pleasers.
Yeah. And so these guys are putting together a web series for Valiant that is designed to sort of raise the profile of Valiant before the Harbinger and Exo movies hit. Yeah. And so Ninjax, one of his foes, manipulates him so that he has to take on the Valiant Universe. And we see him in this trailer taking on Bloodshot, played by the Green Power Ranger, Jason David Frank.
True.
And we see him taking on Archer and Armstrong, which was kind of surprising. And Eternal Warrior.
Exo Manowar,
and Livewire.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't actually remember what Ninjak's deal is. What's his deal?
He's a British secret agent
who has, like, all these gadgets and stuff. He's like Batman meets James Bond meets ninjas.
Okay, I was going to say, there is a ninja somewhere in there. He wears a ninja suit.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I might be. Is it the guy who played Deadshot on Arrow? Isn't he Ninjak?
That is Ninjak, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I like him.
Yeah.
And I actually thought this was a fun trailer.
It's a fun teaser. I was talking to Dave earlier about it and said, this is a really good trailer. And he said, it was all right. And the thing is, it's good by Bat in the Sun trailer. Like, if this was a Marvel or a DC property, you'd be embarrassed by it. But it's Valiant. It's their first go at digital. And for a digital series, this looks fun.
You know, I'm going to put it on. It's about what I expect from sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, somewhere in that middle of the road area. Yeah. So
the special effects look good. The moments look good. I was surprised to see all these characters.
I like the idea of something that, as somebody who kind of is on the cusp of this universe but still hasn't quite been able to fall into it, something that can, like, acquaint me better with some of its key players would be a very good thing and a handy thing.
I heard Faith is going to be in this. Is that correct?
Wouldn't surprise me.
I didn't see her in the trailer.
Me neither, but it'd be crazy not to use her if they could.
Yeah.
All right, two more trailers to talk about. One is one that I know Nick and I are both excited about, and that is the Overwatch Halloween, The Revenge of Dr. Junkenstein.
Well, yes. Well, I think we're both excited because we both texted our wives to turn on our
PlayStations
PS4.
And update them, yes. Yeah, I'm so excited to be playing Overwatch tonight. As you're listening to this, if you're listening to it late, I'm probably playing it now. If it's Wednesday morning, I'm not. I'm asleep.
Well, you're going to just buy a bunch of the loot boxes, right?
I'm probably going to. Here's the thing. With the Olympic stuff, I loved, and I only got a couple of those skins. And I looked right as the thing was ending, and I was like, oh, for like $20, you can get a bunch of the boxes, and they're guaranteed to get at least one skin. And I was like, I don't want to spend any money on this. And now that they're gone forever,
yeah,
I really regret it.
Well, every once in a while, when you're sitting in the kind of the waiting area for the game to start, somebody will activate one of their kind of Olympic things.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just hilarious. And I'm like, I want that.
Yeah. The limited skin stuff is sort of a badge showing how long you've been playing the game, and they're all super fun. So I will probably be spending some money on those to try and get some more. I'll also be playing a lot trying to get those skins. And
I'm going to have to I want the McCree Van Helsing skin. I want that so much.
But I also love all the badges you get. I love all the voice lines. Like, it's nice because a lot of the loot boxes you get in Overwatch – these days, you get it, and it's like you grind all the way to get this next level, and what you get is a couple voice lines and an icon, and it's not worth it. But when it's Halloween stuff, everything's worth it. Even the little icons I like because they're new.
What are the badges you speak of?
You have a badge on your name, like, so when you start up
player icon.
When you start up a match, everyone can see the icon besides
mine.
Your player.
Is like from Summer Olympics. It's the British flag. Tracer.
Yeah, and mine is. Mine is, I believe, Winston dunking, smashing a volleyball.
Yeah.
they'll definitely never do these again.
They might do it again next Halloween.
Like a DLC or something like that for the Olympic one.
No.
Doesn't seem like it.
I don't know how they work on that kind of stuff.
I would say Blizzard is pretty great about all this. They all look fun.
Yeah.
And they're introducing a new, looks like, co-op mode.
Yeah, they do their Game of the Month mode is going to be a co-op where you fight, what, not zombies,
Junkensteins,
but like Junkensteins.
Monsters.
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like another evolution of Lucio Ball. Something new and something different to play when you're tired of getting your ass kicked in the competitive mode.
But one is tired of Overwatch, Nick. One is tired of life.
That's true.
That's what I love about the game is so replayable. They don't have to do any of this stuff to keep my attention.
I won like 5 competitive matches last night, and I was like, I've almost raised my number back to where it used to be. I don't want to play anymore and get stuck with a team that's going to make me lose.
Time to retire undefeated, Nick.
Well, the thing, the Overwatch is, they don't need to do any of this stuff for me. I'm in. I love playing. It's so replayable, and yet they keep doing this stuff, and it's always fun, and it always keeps my attention. So
soon we're gonna have like Valentine's skins.
Who knows?
That's. It makes sense from the guys who created World of Warcraft and have been running that game for over a decade.
Just had a new edition come out, and some of our friends are very excited about it. So, yeah, these guys know how to make a game and keep a game running. Finally, the last trailer, the one that I know without doubt we're all excited for, The trailer for Black Mirror Season 3.
Yes.
I didn't see that trailer.
Oh, man, it's so good.
It but promises, actually, you know, I probably wouldn't want to watch it because I would kind of want to go into these
blind. Yeah, you don't need to know anything.
Yeah.
I watched it because I want to watch it, and it promises the same kind of thing Black Mirror does always, which is exploration of what social media means, what technology means, in sort of a...
the dark and disturbing twists, often unanticipated, that they might go in.
But that comes out October 21st. If you've never seen Black Mirror... By God, people, turn on your Netflix and watch Black Mirror. At least watch this trailer. You'll want to see
it. It's messed up, but it's so good.
All right. I've got lots of TV news. Before we get that, I figure we hit the few things that are not TV news. So the game Firewatch, the indie game Firewatch, is getting a movie adaptation.
Dave played the game.
We talked about this a few months ago when I played it. Really interesting game that probably runs, I guess, maybe 6 or 8 hours maybe of gameplay time, but it's a little one of those weird indie games. When they said they were making a movie of it, it actually made complete sense to me, though, because it has strong characters and writing, and there is a plot that unfolds through it, even though it is also kind of zen and meandering at times. It definitely has a story. And very likable characters. The lead guy who's sort of struggling with his... with his wife's early onset Alzheimer's, and the very kind of likable and foul-mouthed other Firewatch person who's like, I don't know if you ever see her in the whole game, but you should. They're in contact throughout.
I was going to say, it's through radio, right?
Yeah, it's all radio conversation, but it's super interesting. I don't. Do we know who's making it? Like, is it like an indie movie?
I don't think we know a lot about it.
Yeah, we don't know a lot. We just sort of know the initial buzz.
It seems like it would be fitting for that. This is not something you want Ron Howard doing with big special effects and stuff like that. It's, you know, probably going to need to be weird and indie. But I'm curious. I'm curious about it. Getting a strong lead would be a good thing.
Two bits of comic news, both from Dark Horse. First of all, American Gods is getting a comic adaptation in 2017.
Makes sense.
Which makes a lot of sense tying into the show.
We've seen some initial artwork.
Yeah,
for
looks really
it.
Nice.
Good.
Yeah. And then James Stokoe, who has done, among other things, Godzilla Goes to Hell Number One, Godzilla.
20th Century War?
20th Century War, which there's a new dollar issue out for those for this week.
Yep.
Which is. I love Stokoe's art, and he does really imaginative, detail laden things.
Yeah, if you haven't seen him. He the closest comparison might be to say Jeff Darrow.
Yeah.
Sort of that European hyper detailed artwork.
He's doing work on Moon Knight right now.
Yeah, he's doing work on Moon Knight right now.
Yeah. Oh, and also, by the way, you should look up Spider-Man in Vietnam.
Yeah.
To see his crazy. I don't even know if he ever really thought that it might be something that would take off, but no. he's got some actually fully drawn pages and sketches for this hypothetical project. Which would reimagine Peter Parker in the 70s being drafted.
Which they totally should have done.
Yeah, it's...
They did Spider-Man Reign. Why couldn't they have done that?
Yes, exactly. This is like it might actually have some quality to it.
But he is doing an Aliens book called Aliens Dead Orbit for Dark Horse. And I'm excited to see it. He's going to bring some interesting stuff to Aliens.
Mm-hmm. You know, even if it was only seeing him draw the catacombs and stuff of made out of all their alien goo, and seeing how he interprets like their bio xenomorph stuff, that biomechanical look and everything around it. You know, also I don't know if we would see that ship again. You know, that was also the ship that they find on the planet with what do they call it, the navigator or whatever. Yeah.
Seeing him sort of imagine H.R. Geiger stuff would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see where he goes with it. Is he going to bring in new species? What I feel like he's visually imaginative.
Yeah, there's a pitch for it. I don't remember exactly what the deal was, but it was an interesting pitch. So, all right, moving on to all the TV news. They're doing the Legion show on FX, which we knew about.
Yes,
being done by the
not Legion of Superheroes, but Legion the
right
David son Haller. Of Xavier from the X-Men.
Yep. Most notably because it is being done by Fargo's Noah Hawley.
Right.
The trailer's really fun. Well, they have added Jemaine Clement from the Flight of the Conchords.
Yep.
As
and
one
more
of the
recently, What We Do in
Shadows.
Yep. Weird addition. It's going to be an unusual kind of show, clearly.
It makes sense. It fits.
But yeah, you wouldn't normally think, oh, they cast the musical comedy guy from Flight of the Conchords in their serious, weird mutant show. But yeah, it's he's that's the sort of I could see it fitting.
You know what? Jordan Peele's doing horror movies.
Yeah.
Also, Jermaine Clement shows up in Divorce.
He did. I watched the first episode of that.
It's really interesting.
It was interesting.
And he's not... I mean, he's sort of comedic in that, but...
He is, but...
Yeah. It's more restrained. HBO is bringing back Fraggle Rock.
That is to say, they are replaying the original, right? Or are they...
I thought they were doing new stuff.
My understanding was that it was the original was coming back.
Oh, well, that's not as big of a deal.
No, not as big of a deal.
No, I misunderstood.
Yeah,
I thought it was new Fraggle Rock.
Yeah, I thought it was new Fraggle Rock. I didn't look that carefully.
Randy, while
Fraggle
you're looking
Rock
it
person.
Up, I'm going to ask, Nick, did you watch Fraggle Rock at all?
I did.
I remember watching it when it debuted, like, I don't know, what was it, like, 83 or something like that?
I don't
like
have
that.
Super strong memories of it. I remember just kind of basics.
But I was pretty into it at the time. I think in a weird way, it was somehow was never quite what I wanted, or maybe I was a little too old for it when it came out. But... I was definitely fascinated with its little underground world.
Yeah.
With doozers building structures. The big, what do they call them?
I'm going to blank on all of these.
Gorgs? Doozers and gorgs.
Yeah. And the trash heap and all that stuff.
By the way, I've never seen a minute of Fraggle Rock.
No?
No, I'm reading the article.
I'm surprised you, didn't just stumble across it in the 80s.
No, never my thing.
Yeah. It's pretty good. It was, it was still a little lesson-y for my tastes at the time, but I was fascinated by it.
At any rate, you are correct. They are remastering it to put on HBO now, but it is not going to be new stuff. That's not as big of a news.
In a generation divided by Trump and idiocy, I feel like maybe the Fraggles are what we need to bring us together.
The Fraggles. Not the Fraggles we deserve, but the Fraggles we need right now.
Yes, yes.
All right. Amazon has greenlit a show, Lore, based on the podcast that, Nick, you like.
Listened to a few of the episodes, yeah. Now, I haven't listened to a ton, so I can't... I don't quite know what they're going to do with a television series, but...
Dave, you were not super into Lore, as I recall.
I just tried it the other day. I actually had only just tried it.
Oh, okay.
And I feel like I maybe need to listen more because to me it's felt like there was like not a lot to it. I know it's got kind of like a pretty big following, so like I feel like listening to half of one episode is probably not a good way to evaluate it.
Sure, fair enough.
But to me, I Nick, maybe you've for sure heard more than I have. It felt like a kind of interesting telling of the kind of thing you might get if you looked up vampires on Wikipedia. Yeah.
Okay.
And
I don't know how you make a show out of that.
Right.
Well, you can do a documentary style of, like, various monsters and stuff.
But, and I don't know. What do you bring to the table? There are already lots of crappy shows out there. Maybe it's just going to be a good show.
Is it possible that while they're doing this and, like, recounting things, the further you get in the series, like, actual, like, characters emerge or something like that, like a story emerges, and that's what they're going to adapt?
Maybe so.
I guess I need to listen to more because that's what you described.
Sort of hoping as I was listening to it that I would be like, oh, it'd be interesting if they started out with sort of historical lore and then started weaving in some stuff that was invented, the same way they kind of weave fiction into fact in, say, Tanis.
Hmm.
You remember, like, the stuff in Tanis about, I mean, just, they do it all the time, but, like, the Dungeon Master's Guide and that the Baba Yaga hut and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, like 70 or 80% of what they talk about is real, and then they weave in a few interesting fake fictionalized elements.
Yeah.
So I was sort of hoping to get that and get these creepy weird vampire stories I had never actually heard of. But it seemed like I was like, yeah, I feel like I kind of know this. Now if they get into some other stuff like the Wendigo or something like that, that may be more intriguing. But I need to check it out just to see what everybody's on about.
Because I was going
to
say, more people have said that they've enjoyed it than not, so.
All right, we've got some casting news. William Shatner is going to voice Two-Face in that 60s Batman cartoon.
Which is to say that I guess that's a movie, and they're going to be a follow-up movie.
Oh, really? So that's not in the main one? Return of the Caped Crusaders. That's the cartoon.
No, but I thought this was already talking about a follow-up. Maybe it is in that one.
I think it's in that one.
Probably so.
At any rate, was Two-Face never on the 60s Batman show? I don't think he was.
He was not. He's
probably
was
too
not.
Gross.
Yeah, they would have to in some way say that a guy got acid on his face. And
that doesn't work.
And the only acid people understood in the 60s was, what was it, Woodstock?
Here's my question. It's funny stunt casting. Is Shatner actually a good casting for Two-Face?
I think so.
Really?
Well, in the sense that, if you think about it, nobody who was on that show, well, like Frank Gorshin was a pretty good Riddler, but, you know, it's not as if Cesar Romero is an amazing incarnation of the Joker. all the villains on that show share a certain kind of similar trope. They all deal with puns. They all have assistants. They're not wildly different, like on the animated series. Sure. So I believe having a fun and interesting Two-Face, that is to say, like some interesting voice affectations and stuff like that, will be more important than, you know, finding somebody who has a strong dichotomy to their voice acting or something.
I was going to say, I mean, just doesn't seem like the basics would be being able to do two voices, which we know Shatner can't.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, like, even What's-His-Name who did that on the Batman show, he just kind of grittied up his voice.
I just don't think Shatner's capable of that level.
You know, Shatner is not the, the complete wacko that people think he is. There's a reason the original Star Trek is venerated and it wasn't his bad acting.
I saw him on Boston Legal. I know he only has one mode, and that's William Shatner.
Yeah, it's true. He is a kind of a one mode. But having watched some Star Trek recently, there is a certain kind of... he is hammy, but in the same way that, like, sort of... Kenneth Branagh is hammy, there is even like a certain little Shakespearean quality to his speeches and stuff, where he kind of captures this, like a sort of storyteller kind of thing going on, where he is taking you through a variety of emotions, and Shatner is capable of that. He's even probably a little hammier than Branagh, and that's saying something, but he is not a bad actor.
Hayley Atwell, who will not be doing Sharon Carter on the TV show anymore.
Because she's doing,
and also because they canceled it. But she is going to be voicing Sharon Carter in the Avengers Secret Wars cartoon, which I guess is season 4 of the Avengers cartoons by Disney XD. Now, I wrote off these cartoons because they seem too goofy.
Yeah,
and because both Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man,
they're like
and
real quippy, right?
Both Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers replaced better shows. That got canceled for no reason.
Earth's Mightiest Heroes,
which was great, got canceled because they wanted to start a new show. Yeah. Spectacular Spider-Man was probably the best Spider-Man cartoon ever done, among the best Spider-Man ever done, and it was canceled to make way for Ultimate Spider-Man's jokey take.
That's because most things Greg Weisman gets canceled.
So I wrote these off early on, but my daughter occasionally watched them and liked them. My son occasionally watched them and liked them. Is it possible this stuff is not as terrible as I thought it was?
Well, I tried watching a couple of the early seasons of Avengers, and it was not good.
Because there's like, I see
was
that
it
like,
objectively not good, or was it like kids are gonna like enjoy it?
I mean, kids probably enjoy it.
But I saw Miss Marvel's in this, and female Thor, and like they've brought in. It sounds like maybe this is just in the Secret War stuff, but it sounds like they're bringing in some of the stuff I like from the shows, from the comics rather. And I don't know that I don't have time to watch a
middling. You should go watch every season up to now so you know what's going on when Hayley Atwell appears.
I don't have time for a middling season of Avengers on cartoons, but I'm curious now. It sounds like they're doing some interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, last bit of cast news is much more exciting. Sigourney Weaver is playing the villain in Defenders. Who the hell is she playing?
I don't know the answer to that.
I don't either. I have no speculation. I have no idea.
I've heard some rumors that I think are interesting.
What have you heard?
Madam Mask?
No, I've actually heard Mephisto.
Oh, wow.
And they're going to sort of change gender on Mephisto. She's actually going to be playing the devil.
Oh, man. Sigourney Weaver playing the devil would be fantastic.
That's kind of interesting.
I was very
interested. Daredevil
at
least
that.
Has dealt with Mephisto before in the Senti's run, sure. And they might have keyed off of that as kind of an interesting, weird notion.
And there was some reason why this was brought up, and now I'm blanking on the why, but there was like a connection to things. So
now that is, interestingly, you know, that is, Mephisto is as high a level of mysticism as you can get. And I was not like, it seems like their Netflix shows had not. I mean, I guess they've delved into some mysticism, right?
With the hand and with the Iron Fist, you're going to get the dragon.
I think, by the way, that this is an out-there prediction. I don't believe that's where they're going.
No, I don't think so either.
But it's an interesting notion.
Yeah, and when I heard that, I was like, Sigourney Weaver can do that.
Out of curiosity, have they done, say, Madam Mask?
Yes, Madam Mask was in season 2 of Agent Carter. She was not done particularly well.
That's too bad. And she wouldn't have fit anyway because this is kind of, I assume it'd at least be sort of local problems. Like, that is to say... New York-based stuff, and not like
I assume it will
Madam
be
Mask is kind of international.
I assume it'll be a threat that faces New York. That will be the threat.
Yeah,
but something that threatens all of New York because they each have their neighborhoods. Like Harlem is Luke Cage. Hell's Kitchen is Daredevil. I don't know where Iron Fist is going to be. Brooklyn,
but
maybe.
It almost has to be like something that that's a little bit below the Avengers pay grade, I
yes.
think.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It can't be... Mephisto trying to drag New York to hell is kind of an Avengers problem.
Yeah.
But then unless, is he dealing with something else? They got Thanos to deal with.
That's not good enough, though. I think what they need to do is, like, say, like Dave
said... Well, the Defenders is going to be, like, a season, so presumably they're going to be dealing with whatever this problem is over the course of time.
Yeah, but only 13 episodes.
Right.
What I think the point that Dave was making that's a reasonable point is that if it's too big, it does feel like it's going to beg the question of what happens with... why aren't the Avengers here? Whereas if it is something that's just, like, obviously below the Avengers pay grade, but still dangerous enough... then that works. And I think that's the needle. The Mephisto
idea actually, in a weird way, could work for that because if he was slowly enthralling people, yeah.
Civil War broke up all the Avengers, so the Avengers actually technically don't exist.
Yeah, but
they're
that's not
Wakanda.
But they're still around, Nick. That's the problem. It doesn't work that way. You can't.
Right.
People are going to ask that question.
If there was playing a big devil's advocate.
Oh, I see how it is.
He's a literal.
He works for Mephisto.
Advocate.
Yeah.
Yeah. If like say a. You know, Mephisto raised up a big old kaiju creature, you'd expect Iron Man or Spider-Man to come swinging at it.
Yeah. By the way, if Sigourney Weaver was Mephisto, I'd probably be inclined to do whatever she said.
Probably so.
Yeah.
Well, and was it Jeff Loeb? An interview was rolling around with him about a crossover with...
yeah, I didn't put that in the news, and here's why. Someone asked him the question at a con.
Okay.
It was such a non-answer.
Okay.
What Nick is asking about is a Netflix crossover with the regular TV.
Someone asked the question, and people... I don't know why people are still thinking it's going to happen. Marvel and DC... Marvel have its movies division, its Netflix division, and its Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They are separate, and they are deliberately separate.
Well, the only thing... The reason I gave it any credence, because I didn't read the article, was the fact that Jeff Loeb actually... produces the Netflix stuff as well.
Sure, he does.
And that was like, you know, I could see Jeff Loeb wanting to take Ghost Rider and put him into the Netflix or something like that.
No, the answer was very clearly, you should wait and see. That was his answer.
Okay.
It meant nothing. It was clearly...
The kind of classic,
Jeff
you
Loeb
know...
being Jeff Loeb?
No,
well,
it was...
That's what everybody,
anyone
every
do.
PR
yeah.
dude would do. They'd be like, interesting idea. We'll have to think about that.
Yeah, it's... No one's going to tell the fans in the room...
Definitely never happening.
That's not happening. What
Go
are you talking
crying,
about?
Kid.
Yeah. No, they're going to say, oh, that's a great idea. We should think about that. Yeah, that's what he said. That's what it was. And it was somebody making a story out of nothing. Because the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that said, there is at least a little bit of there have been, like, vague crossover between the TV shows and the movies, right? They've used
They've
some movie
mentioned.
People on the
show.
Here's the way it works. It's one way. Netflix shows mention the Avengers and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right, right.
The movies will never mention the Netflix shows. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. mentions the movies and stuff. The movies are never going to acknowledge and will directly contradict what's going on in S.H.I.E.L.D. The movies supersede everything. The TV shows... do not have any dominion over that continuity.
I'm just saying there has been they've held hands.
Well, it, more like
if you've been
one of them, one of them's been grabbing at the hand, and the other one just kind of shakes it off. And then one of them reports that they held hands.
I feel like the Netflix shows have utilized the sort of that more than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I would say the Netflix shows are less likely to be directly contradicted by the movies.
Yeah,
but I think that if something came up where they wanted to, they just contradict it. They don't care. I don't think there's any obligation on the part of the movie people to pay any attention to what's going on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. I think that's probably they're so different in tone. I don't know that I want that involved in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
But
I would like them all to work together.
You don't want the Purple Man creeping in on the next Avengers movie?
I really don't. Don't get me wrong. I would love Luke Cage to show up in the Avengers movie at some point, but it's not going to happen. But this does bring
never
us to our next
never.
That does bring us to our next topic of discussion, and our final topic of discussion, which is Supergirl is not merging with the CW.
Immediately.
Why? No, not merging, period.
Not.
They're is not that, doing it.
It's a parallel universe.
They're going to remain a parallel universe. She's on Earth 3
or whatever. I thought the thing that I read about it indicated that, or kind of phrased it in the... in the yet kind of thing,
no.
Like it was still possible.
No, it was not
From
phrased that way.
Yeah.
If it's being phrased yet, it's for fans and that's saying, well, anything could happen. Hmm. But what I read was a pretty definitive, no, she's in her own universe. We don't want to have to, we wanted them to do the fun crossovers, but we don't want to have to deal with the ramifications. And that makes perfect sense to me because if you suddenly bring in Supergirl into that universe, suddenly Arrow was not the first person to put on a costume. Flash wasn't the first metahuman, and Superman's around. That changes the vibe of the show really big.
And Oliver Queen, because he's killing, gets taken out.
Well, I just think you can't bring Superman and Supergirl in that universe without having a big change, and I think they didn't want to make that big of a change.
Yeah. I just figured that that's what all this Flashpoint stuff they were doing was for.
No, Flashpoint was clearly just a Flash thing. It's done. It was a one-episode thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was all these rumors. Everybody always wants somebody to be bigger than it. There was, like, that Arrow was going to be in the Flashpoint universe, and that was clearly another one of those things where someone asked a question at a convention, and they got the answer, well, I guess technically it's in that universe, but in fact they made no reference to it whatsoever.
I don't want it to cross over.
So I don't necessarily either. I mean, I would have expected ramifications in, like, Legends of Tomorrow, given how much they're involved with time travel, but no. I think that they want to have the shared universe when they want it, but they don't want to do the work of maintaining it.
Right.
I guess I can get that. It just seems weird to have them all on the network and one of them still separate.
I get it. But like I said, I understand the reason.
Like, if you ever wanted to throw together a Justice League or whatever, like, you have these opportunities, but it would help to merge the universes. You would want to flatten the layers, if you to use a Photoshop metaphor.
Yeah, I agree.
DC Universe have Earth 1, Earth 2 forever. So.
The problem with it...
I never liked that.
The big problems with not having a multiverse universe is Superman and Supergirl being in the universe changes things considerably.
It does.
It changed things for Superman and Supergirl because they had a universe set up for themselves. Mm-hmm. And if you suddenly bring them in, then they've got to deal with the fact of the existence of, you know, Deathstroke and the Suicide Squad and everything else that's been introduced over five seasons of Arrow.
Actually, I think it's easier for them because, you know, everybody kind of protects their own city.
It's easier, but it's still an adjustment. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they probably were like, you know what? Can we just get our feet underneath us? Can we just go ahead and do our thing? You do your thing.
That makes sense to me.
It makes sense to me. I won't lie. I would have liked a nice, consistent Marvel Cinematic Universe style CW TV universe where everything crosses over, but I understand why they're not doing it. But yeah, I don't think it's a mistake necessarily.
No.
All right. That takes care of our news for the week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, November 12th. And Nick, why don't you start us off this week?
Sure. I'm going to choose an Image book, like last week.
Yep.
And that is Reborn number 1, mm-hmm. By Mark Millar and Greg Capullo. We've all come around a little bit on Mark Millar. He's kind of changed his tune a little bit.
Yes, we have come around.
Two of the three have definitely come around.
Dave stands alone.
I stand alone.
No, but... this is his book that he's been working on with Capullo for a while now, sort of about when you die, you go to another place instead of, you know, not heaven, not hell, but another dimension. And this is sort of like fantasy themed.
Yeah, well, it's like there's a war going on. It's like post-apocalyptic and yeah.
But it centers on an older woman who's lost her husband, kind of feels very alone, kind of not wanting to die, but, you know, realizing that that's what happens to everyone. And sort of her path, and we get to see all of her life and things like that. I thought it was interesting. There were some really interesting moments that Millar throws in there. Feels very normal in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah, that's what weirded me out about this, is that the premise is so out there, and I thought it was really interesting, but they don't really get to the premise till, like, the last few pages of the book. It's really all about setting up this woman's the end of her life and what her life was like, and she's an atheist, and everybody around her is like asking her about her faith as she gets closer to death. And it was very grounded, and in a way that I thought was not what I was expecting from this first issue.
Right. I think they want you to really kind of get in the mindset of this woman, and sort of when she's shocked out of into this new world, kind of, because she's reborn as sort of a younger version of herself in a lot of ways, and is thrust into a new situation. So it's interesting. I think that's kind of why I liked it. It wasn't what I expected it to be. It didn't have sort of the normal tropes that Millar uses. I mean, it has some of them, but... And I really liked Capullo's artwork. I think he's...
Millar is kind of a high-concept guy these days.
Yeah.
He usually has kind of a big sort of hook that's usually, I think of as kind of... It's sort of a cinematic kind of concept, usually.
I can see sort of this on, you know, in a movie or something.
He's definitely already got advanced payment.
Oh, sure.
Oh, I'm sure. No, and if you've read any of Scott Snyder's Batman and liked the art, I mean, it's going to be on the same par as that.
Yeah, if anything, that looks like, even you know, maybe even slightly more refined, you know, for Capullo.
And I thought that
basically anybody who's been following any of his recent ones, like Empress or, well, what are Huck the other ones? Or... Huck, yeah, that kind of stuff, is probably going to want to check this out.
Yep.
Which is a lot of people.
And I like the design work of the sort of fantasy sci-fi land that is in there. It's got cool machines and, I don't know, I really enjoyed it. It was a good first issue, and I expect a lot of people to pick this one up.
Dave?
My pick is from Titan Comics in conjunction with Games Workshop, the first issue of Warhammer 40,000 Will of Iron. This is the return to comics of the Warhammer 40K universe, or, well, Warhammer in general, because they also did fantasy back in the day.
Last seen at Boom Comics.
Yep.
Maybe five or six years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It was a long time ago. And they did a good job with it at the time, and I feel that they are off to a strong start on this one as well.
Yeah, I agree.
They are zeroing in on this one on a group of the Dark Angels Space Marines. Now, I don't know my Warhammer lore well enough to know what their specific deal is, but it is clear that there is a dark secret to their past. And I feel like I have a vague memory that it's something to do with like the Horus Heresy going back way in the day, possibly some sort of the working with demons or something like that, or they might have inadvertently helped the traitorous legions that became the Chaos Space Marines. But they, like, have kept it a secret all this time. Like, only the higher echelons, you know this. It's like Scientology.
But with powered armor.
And
although, I don't know for sure that Scientologists don't have powered
they
armor.
They might.
So when Tom Cruise comes after you in his Space Marine suit.
You know, that actually could have been what Edge of Tomorrow was about.
You run. Anyway, there is a planet in this sort of galactic cluster that's... was kind of shrouded by warp storms and has kind of become uncovered recently. And it seems like there's a suggestion that it has something. There's perhaps evidence on this planet, as well as like possible, you know, chaos dangers that have been building up over the years. But there may be evidence of whatever their big secret is. And so they are sending in a team. Simultaneously, there's an Inquisitor who's looking into it,
yep.
Who is has some notion of their dark secrets and is hoping to kind of draw them out. And for those who don't know, the Inquisitors are like they're kind of high investigators of the almighty, you know, cosmic emperor in this world, who's even though the Imperium is like sort of the good guys, they are crazy, dark, fascistic, you know, almost Inquisition level, you know, zealots themselves.
So they're kind of Dread times a thousand.
Judge Dread. Yeah. But of course, that is also part of the fun. You know, people in this say things like,
shout for the Emperor?
They do not, but someone does say, suffer not the warp spawn to live.
Yeah.
They say metal things all the time, very medieval metal stuff.
He says that, by the way, while raising his chainsword in the air.
Yeah, as they fight chaos demons in the ruins of the decimated planet.
I don't think it's a Warhammer comic unless somebody has a chainsword.
I agree.
It's interesting that there is, you know, there's this kind of... there's a little interesting backstory amongst the Space Marines going on. They sort of have their own little sort of internal politicking. It's interesting that this kind of rather zealous Inquisitor is trying to out them. And then, of course, there is also a Chaos Space Marine faction. So you have a lot of things that looks like they're going to come to a head on this world. What I really like about Warhammer 40K, aside from the grimdark of it all, becomes kind of, I don't know, there's not really any dark humor even in this one. It's just dark.
No, it's just dark.
But that mixture of, like, technology and medievalism, almost. They're on these ships that look like cathedrals, but they're pulling up holograms and things like that.
Yeah.
They talk like medieval knights, I like the Warhammer 40K setting. Its particular brand of darkness is appealing to me.
I do have a question for you, though.
Yeah.
How user-friendly is this? Can you just come in without knowing anything about the 40K universe?
I think so. I feel like they're going to build you up to know what you need to know. First page, the inside front cover, does give you a little bio on the three sort of central characters to it. you know, if all you know is that there are space marines and they go around the galaxy trying to cleanse it of chaos and right. and aliens and stuff that, then you're going to have enough to get into it with.
I'm looking at ships and I'm like, I've seen that model. I know that model. Drop ships. And I've read a few of the Warhammer novels, but I'm not, like, extremely versed in the backstories.
Right.
But
I'm not either. Cool. Like I say, I don't even quite know what their big secret is. I know it is, like anybody who's listening to this who knows Warhammer stuff is just probably shouting it at the at their screen right now.
Yes.
But you know, it's also a big action heavy book with, you know, planetary drops, not unlike the Starship Troopers novel stuff. Anyway, it's a good first issue to kick it off. There is intrigue and action and the sort of fascinating futurism, medievalism of the Warhammer 40K universe. So that is my pick. Randy?
All right. I am picking an Amazing Spider-Man event, Dead No More, The Clone Conspiracy number 1.
A.K.A. what many people probably know as The Clone Conspiracy.
Yeah. This is Dan Slott with artist Jim Chung. So it's got really, really nice art.
Chung is an awesome artist.
And this is basically a continuation of what he's been doing in Amazing Spider-Man. It's almost like, I feel like if you haven't been reading Amazing Spider-Man, it's going to be not off-putting. It's certainly easy enough to pick up what's going on. But a lot of the character interaction, like, this feels like it should just be Amazing Spider-Man. I'm a little puzzled by why they made it a separate miniseries.
I mean, I suppose it's a little bit probably like those Green Lantern events, like when they did Blackest Night and stuff like that, where you can just tell a lot more stories, and, you know, that's money, but also more stories to be told.
But regardless, I've been loving Amazing Spider-Man, and this is a really good story. This is basically the central issue they've been sort of building up to in the Amazing Spider-Man run is that the Jackal, Spidey's old foe, who was a clone guy who did clones, he cloned the original clone Spider-Man, Ben Reilly, cloned Gwen Stacy, all that kind of stuff, is working on some kind of new company called, I think, New Gen or New Tech, New You. And they're bringing people back to life. And not just, you know, like, notable villains and heroes, but also, like, regular people. They're presenting themselves as sort of an experimental company. Everyone who's brought to life gets these pills that they need to take once a day that they have to buy from New You. If they don't have the pills, then they're going to degenerate.
Curiosity, is there any specification, like, it has to be recently dead? They can't, like, take a skeleton, I assume.
No, it seems like they grab genetic material from literally anything. So
okay.
It could be people long dead.
Right, right. They would rebuild it and stuff.
So they brought back to life a lot of people who maybe you didn't even know were dead, like, say, the Rhino, who was apparently dead.
Okay.
But they bring back a couple notable Spidey supporting cast members in here. They also, Spidey sort of finally gets a clue as to what's going on here and has a confrontation with some of his big villains. And it is an interesting opener. I'm not quite sure where they're going with it, but
it's not the worst place to be in a first issue.
It's a really good opener, and it reminds me again that Dan Slott can take what seems like a really bad idea, like, say, what if every Spider-Man did a multi-dimensional story where we had people killing all the Spider-Men? Or, hey, what if Doc Ock took over Peter's body for 3 years?
Right.
And turn it into something great. Hey, what if Peter Parker was older, had a corporation, was successful, and was sort of a low-rent Tony Stark? Like, all these sound like terrible ideas, and he's executed every one perfectly. Mm-hmm. So, hey, what if we did another shot of the Clone Saga?
I was going to say, that's the ballsiest thing, is, like, taking a storyline that was, like, one of the most notorious failings of the 90s, even if it did have, like, a lot of energy and promise at first.
Yeah.
Most people remember it as a disaster.
This is really fun and really, really beautifully drawn, and there's definitely still a lot of mysteries to be left as to what's going on, what the motivation is, and what's the secret evil plan the Jackal has, but I really dug this. My backup pick is a book that I've never been a huge fan of these characters, The Great Lakes Avengers number 1. This is I've always found them a little too wacky.
Yeah, they were some kind of slightly novelty characters that John Byrne introduced back in the day for like an issue or two, and then moved on, but the characters have managed to pop up every once in a while.
Yeah, they have, like, Squirrel Girl was a part of them for a while. I know there was a miniseries that I think Dan Slott wrote where did Mr. Immortal get all of them killed?
I don't know if you got all
And they all
them
came
killed.
Back to life or something, because they make reference to that, like, maybe he got
them
all killed.
I think that's right.
That wouldn't be... They all have
kind of weirdo loser powers.
Yeah. Well, and their guy, Doorman, who's this guy with sort of an all-black costume with a white cloak, Who has always looked like Death Urge, the guy who sort of flies around on skis. And, well, he somehow became Death Urge.
Oh, weird.
So he's like now has like, he works like a Herald of Death, flies around on cosmic skis.
That was part of the crossover.
Yeah. I didn't read that out of that part of it. So this is definitely a continuation, but you don't need to have read it because I didn't read it and I've still put all that together. And they also have acknowledged sort of that Big Bertha in 2016 is maybe a politically incorrect character. And, The premise here is that this introduced very quickly at the beginning is that Flatman, their Reed Richards ex-leader, has sort of retired from superheroing, and as a result of trying to claim the Great Lakes Avengers name legally a few years back, basically the rights have lapsed, and sometimes as a result of sort of legal maneuvers, he is now the sole holder of the Avengers copyright. And so in order to give that rights back to the Avengers, the lawyers have to negotiate, and they negotiate that the Great Lakes Avengers are now a permanent addition to the Avengers. So the Great Lakes Avengers are coming back together. And it's sort of goofy. They introduce some new characters. It's fun. It's got the same kind of vibe as sort of Unbeatable Squirrel Girl or Hellcat or one of those.
Yeah, I don't know who Zach Gorman is or Will Robson, but... It's a great book, especially Robson's artwork.
Yeah, it's really fun. The art is really good. It's got a nice cartoony vibe to it. It's definitely goofy, but it's goofy in a fun way.
Come on. Flatman's screen name.
Flatman's screen name is Darth Vapelord. Actually, I don't think that's Flat. I think that's someone sending him a friend request.
Oh, yes.
It's Darth Vapelord. Dave, what's your secondary pick?
My secondary pick is the second issue of Britannia from Valiant. The seemingly out of continuity with the Valiant universe, or at least so far, kind of horror fantasy comic, but mostly horror comic set in ancient Rome, sort of during Nero's reign. This issue, the last issue ended with Antonius, the guy they call like their detectioner.
Yep.
He's like the sort of a Roman agent for the Vestal Virgins cult. He's actually in Britain right now, investigating. This weird sort of massacre that trying to figure out whether it was the like druidic in nature and
#not all druids.
I mean, we definitely have seen weird Lovecraftian type monsters, so this is beyond sort of legend and into kind of something of its own world of mythology, but it is very strongly steeped in history. So Peter Milligan kind of goes to some lengths to make it feel, if not historically accurate to Romans fighting monsters, but like the interfighting and politicking within the Roman, whether it's the leadership or there's, different commanders duking it out as far as like for control, feels very real. And this issue, he and his men run, kind of join up with an encampment of of other Romans that are down there. And very specifically kind of run up against trouble with the leaders there. They're not wanted. And he starts doing this cool thing where he sort of uses his detective skills in almost this Sherlock Holmesian way and figures out some stuff about the guy who's opposing him and kind of knocks him down a peg by, like, he pulls out... I mean, it is very Sherlock Holmesy.
Okay.
And the guy actually thinks that he's, like, doing magic. And I think the books that he looked at that the Vestal Virgins had in the first one, it's almost like they have these concepts for, like, profiling and psychology and stuff like that that wouldn't arise in, sort of in philosophically for, like, hundreds and hundreds of years. Mm. But he's kind of – it's as if he's got access to them early. So he manages to find a way to work his way into the company. But this is all sort of about the infighting within that. There's, bouts of violence, cool investigation stuff down in these, like, misty ruins. There are, in fact, some creepy monsters and stuff like there. But this one, the focus of this issue, I would say, is on internal fighting and also his him bringing those skills to bear, which wasn't a big part of the first issue. But I'm really liking the character. Nobody here is kind of stainless. They all feel very real to me in a way that is not very action-adventure-y, but does feel very real.
Hmm.
Anyway, I continue to be intrigued by the series because I have no idea where it's going at any given time. So keep on checking this one out. If you tried out the first issue, and if you didn't try out the first issue, try out the first issue. The art by Juan Jose Rip gives it a kind of a... There's a creepy, unsettling quality to it. It feels like you are a little bit like the Avatar books that he drew before because of that. So it's almost like you're reading Alan Moore's Neonomicon. And if you've read that, you know what I'm talking about when I say creepy. anyway, yes, I'm very much enjoying it and had no expectations of it prior to this. A Roman-era mystery Lovecraftian story.
Nick, you're back up.
Mine is The Lost Boys, number one. From Tim Seeley. I swear...
Based on the greatest movie of all time.
I don't know if
based on Joel Schumacher's best
greatest movie.
Yeah, that'll agree. And it could only have been made...
Diehard phone booth fans.
It could only have been made better if you had had Gerard McMahon's Cry Little Sister playing.
ready your Spotify list at home, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly. No, but...
It's a sequel to it.
It is a sequel to it, and basically carries those characters over. You get to see what happens to the Frog Brothers.
Do you mean like 1 year later or like 10 years later?
It seems more like it's, 1 year later.
Yeah, it's more like 1 year, 6 months.
Okay.
But basically, you get to see the Frog Brothers, you get to see Michael, sort of how they're adjusting to life after the vampires have been extinguished, essentially. Yep. But not
and
so
I
much.
Assume, yeah, I assume it's not just a, wow, it sure is great that all the vampires are gone and can just relax.
You know what my favorite bit of this is? Is that Grandpa has that great line at the end about all the damn vampires. It's clear that he's known about it the whole time.
Yes.
Well, they do a big reveal, and this was so good that he has been part of a, like, vampire hunting society.
Yeah.
And there are all these old men who meet at, like, an old VA hall.
Yep.
And they talk about old vampire hunting war stories and that kind of stuff.
That's pretty good.
It's a great twist.
You know, we were talking earlier about how Lost Boys... is kind of a perfect standalone movie in its way and doesn't necessarily say, I need a sequel.
Right.
But if you're going to do one, it sounds like they've got some neat ideas.
They also, he's training the Frog Brothers to actually be vampire hunters.
Yep. While,
not just a couple of spazzes.
Michael is working at a day job, trying to be in a relationship with Star.
Yep.
But Laddie is still around.
Yes, but Laddie's a little kid I'd forgotten all about.
Yep.
And
the Attack of Eddie Munster.
Michael's little brother is working in the Frog Brothers comic shop, trying to run that. So there's some fun little things on that.
But the big twist you don't want to give away.
No, I will not.
But there is a twist.
There is a twist.
And I will... I don't know... And Nanook is in it. I will say that.
Yay. Nanook is in it, yep.
And I love Nanook. But no, I will say the art in this by... I'm blanking on his name. It is... Scott Godwalski?
Yeah, I don't know who that is, but the art is great.
It is. It's really nice. He does likenesses in a way that it works. You instantly recognize.
They're very recognizable, yeah.
And, I figured Tim Seeley would bring his A game to this, and he did.
I want to know how 80s it is.
Well, there is the shirtless sax player does feature into it. In fact, it's on the variant cover.
One of our two alt cover, or the two covers we had, had muscle sax man.
I was going to say, he does appear on an alt cover, and he does appear on the first page.
80s fashion is still very much to be found.
Nice.
Yeah, this is a sequel I didn't know I wanted, but it's pretty good.
Yep.
Nick, what else is on your list for this week?
Yeah, now I've got a few things. Red Hood and the Outlaws, number 3.
Mm-hmm.
We have finally gotten to Bizarro and what that means for Red Hood. The first issue of the new Solo series. I have a lot of fondness for that character.
Solo was like an anti-terrorist guy from the 90s.
While he lives, terror dies.
Exactly. That's the...
pretty much it spells it all out there.
But he's like a Punisher who can teleport.
Yeah, that's his big thing. He can teleport. And he's
and kills terrorists instead of criminals.
Yeah, and he's James Bourne. So
right, I forgot his name was James Bourne.
Jeez.
I didn't get to the reveal. All I saw was him teleporting around Tom McFarlane's Spider-Man, killing terrorists and yelling, "While I live, terror dies," dropping off a grenade and then teleporting away.
Yep.
And when I was in college...
should get in contact with him.
When I was in college reading that was the coolest thing ever. It's the same Randy who liked X-Force number 1.
Oh, yeah.
I still have some fondness for that.
Suck at terrorists.
No, and then I have Mosaic number 1. New character from the Inhumans. Gets his own series. Then Chimichanga number 1. Eric Powell and Stephanie Buscema. New series. The third issue of... All-Star Batman and Robin. New story arc for Uncanny Avengers that deals with the Hand stealing Hulk's body.
Whoops.
So Yeah, if you think that's a bad idea or an interesting idea, you should definitely check it out.
I hope they make it a zombie Hulk ninja.
All right. By the way, Dave or Nick, I believe, wasn't I doubtful that that was going to happen?
Yeah.
All right. So you got to be. You were right on that.
I was right on that one. The second issue of Supergirl, which sees sort of Cyborg Superman and Kara continue. There's some interesting stuff there, I will say, and I really liked this.
Continue
this
their issue. Chess game? Continue yes. their sparring?
Well, there was a big reveal in the first issue, and I don't want to reveal it, but gotcha. There is some relationship between okay. the two. Second issue of Jim Zub's horror comic Glitter Bomb.
And I liked that one.
Yeah, it was good.
What's the premise of Glitter Bomb?
It's sort of the kind of older actress.
An older Hollywood actress who is sort of she's enraged.
Possessed.
Yeah, she's so enraged by the all the culture of Hollywood and how it treats older women mm-hmm. that it's almost like she's spawned this demon from within herself to take her revenge.
Yes.
Third issue of Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. Been a fun series so far. And then the final issue of Night of the Monster Men in Detective Comics.
You get a chance to read that?
I have not yet on that one. I've really enjoyed the series thus far, though, so... And then there's issue 20 of Deadpool, which I thought was a very interesting issue because Deadpool is confronted with a young girl who wants to commit suicide, and why would Deadpool help her? And they come at it in an interesting way. I feel like Jerry Duggan tackles the problem and plot.
It didn't feel like a very special episode of Deadpool.
No.
Does Deadpool go up to her and say, you're stronger than you think you are, just like All-Star Superman did?
He does not. He actually acknowledges that he's not the person she should be talking to.
Does he then call Superman who comes in and talks to her?
No, but that would have been
cool. Off the edge of the building.
That seems more likely.
What I was telling Nick earlier, and I have not read this, I feel like he should say, you have to live... I need somebody to play Pogs with me. That's what I would do if I were writing it.
Yeah, but it is interesting. It's not all played for laughs. There's a good story there.
So here's something interesting about the weeks we've been having lately. Nick just named like 10 different comics. I have an additional 10 or 11 comics. None of them are the same.
Yep.
Like, there is definitely a lot of stuff to read in comics right now. Like, if you're not digging something, go look at something else. Like, there's lots of different stuff out there
yep.
right now.
Yep. If you break a little bit out of your zone, there's probably a whole wave of other interesting options.
Dave, what other options do you have?
I have not read it yet, but this looks interesting from Boom Studios, Warlords of Appalachia, which looks like post-apocalyptic stuff to me, but I don't know. Dude's got like a compound bow on the cover. There's like these Spec Ops dudes running around and behind him. They appear to be perhaps on the hillsides of Appalachian Mountains. But I don't know.
I forget what the deal is. Because of the back, because it's a song sheet. You actually
right.
have like lyrics and I assume for a theme song.
It shows four different factions on here, which I want to know what their deal is. They each have a symbol. There's the Blue Boys, cops. Augmented Cavalry, which it looks like has a little gear thing, so maybe people who are like part machine. Mountain Faith, sounds like old school, like hill people. And there's Sweet Rock, which I don't know what that is, but their symbol is a mountain.
And this is the other thing about these bigwigs, is that we have run out of time to read all these books we want to read.
I'd really be interested to know what the deal is with this one.
So all we can do is guess at it based on the covers.
It looks pretty cool, I have to say. Flipping through it, it's really nice artwork.
Speaking of mountain men, Brian Wood's Briggsland hits its third issue. That's the sort of the Sons of Anarchy-esque spotlight on a militia group. Then there's a new James Bond comic starting up under the title Hammerhead.
Yep, which is Andy Diggle writing.
Yep. Killer Be Killed number 3 from Ed Brubaker. Really want to see that.
I read and is really, really good.
Doom Patrol number 2. And lastly, a little hardcover graphic novel adaptation, is it?
Maybe.
Or maybe an original story from Neil Gaiman.
No, it says adapt on the back.
Randy says adapted. But Neil Gaiman, who's somewhat famous, and Colleen Duran, who's collaborated with him before on, among other things, Sandman, but I forget what all else.
Yep.
But looks like a really lovely adaptation of his story, Troll Bridge. The painting style was really beautiful. I kind of liken it in some ways. I mean, you know, it is Colleen Duran who's been around in the industry for a good while.
Actually reminds me of what Gene Haw's doing on May.
Yeah, and I also remind me a little bit of like the Dead Man thing last year. But yeah, I can see last week But yeah, I can definitely see the Gene Ha influence. Even a little Charles Vess in some of the watercolor on the greenery and stuff in here. Anyway, gaming fans, you're going to almost certainly want to check this one out.
Before Randy, you jump to Randy, I do want to steal back, because there is a trade I forgot to mention.
Yeah, which is?
It's a little bit of nostalgia for me, and that's Ghost Rider and the Rise of the Midnight Suns trade, sure. Which I have a lot of fondness for. It finally comes out.
Johnny Blaziness Fire Shotgun.
And
Morbius, the Living Vampire.
Yep. All of these people fighting Lilith.
Yes. I forget who else
Hannibal
is in
King
that.
Hannibal King and Blade.
Oh, yeah, the Night Stalkers.
Yeah, as the complete Night Stalkers.
All right, I have The Fix number 6, which continues to be probably, this is almost certainly going to be my best new book of the year. It's really good. Pound and Iron Fist number 9, which wraps up their Civil War story in really fine fashion and does some interesting stuff with the characters. Ulysses, Civil War 2, Ulysses number 3, which turned out to be a really interesting book that sort of put me on board Warren Ellis' take on Karnak, which I was kind of surprised by. Moon Knight number 7, which is a story that we're now 7 issues into Moon Knight, and I still don't know 100% what's going on. I'm still really interested in it. Half of it is done by James Stokoe and features a weird science fiction future where space werewolves are fighting Moon Knight and Frenchie in their space fighters. And the other half is Mark Spector as Jake Lockley the cabbie riding around with Frenchie. And it sort of interacts with it. So it all still seems to be in Mark's head. And I'm not sure what's going on, but it has beautiful art by James Stokoe and Francesco Francavilla. And it's all really entertaining stuff. I've got Daredevil number 12, which pits Daredevil against Karnak somehow. I managed to read that. The finale of Kieran Gillen's Darth Vader with number 25. I expect that to be a great finale. Haven't had time to read it yet. Star Wars Han Solo number 4, which I've been enjoying so far. Haven't had a chance to read that yet. And New Superman number 4, which is probably my favorite of the DC Rebirth books. In fact, I think it's the only one I'm still reading, and haven't had a chance to read that yet either. Also, for those of you who are Brubaker fans, and I am definitely that, the Fade Out, his 50s straight-up Hollywood noir with Sean Phillips, is out in a beautiful hardcover that collects the entire story, and I am definitely picking that up and think all lovers of noir should do the same. I think that about wraps it up for us this week. I do want to mention, we said last week that the Comic Pants podcast had been lost to the age of history. One of our listeners, whose name I should have handy, and I don't, and I'm sorry about that.
We'll tip
that next week. But he messaged that he had saved a few of them, so we've got like 15 episodes, which I will probably start releasing on the broadcast feed as soon as I get a chance to go through them and make sure the audio is okay, make sure we didn't say anything too horrible on there.
We definitely had fewer limits, or a little bit more rough and tumble than
there'll
we
be
are
more cursing. There'll be lots
more
cursing,
yeah. But this guy who found it is an archaeologist of pop culture.
Yes. And if any of you out there also have any episodes of Comic Pants, please get in touch. We would love to be able to grab some of those old episodes. And until next time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.